This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Jason here again with another guest episode series here on the Authentic Persuasion Show. I say this all the time. It's part of my mission. My focus is on helping fill the world with over a million authentic persuaders. This show is for you, whether you're in sales, you're in leadership, you own a company, you want to build your first sales team, you had a sales team, you had to fire them all, and now you want to build another one, like wherever you are, because we see that all, like all of that happens wherever you are. So grateful you're here. Very excited for my guest. Very few people I've talked to have been in the professional sales education game like he has and is doing all the other things that he does. Literally talking to him before we jumped on the recording here, I'm feeling lazy about what I'm working on because he is just doing so much. And I'm excited to talk about that in the frame of sales. So today, my guest is Jim Pouliopoulos from Bentley University. He is an expert at the intersection of selling, personal positivity, workplace well-being. He specializes in delivering transformative sales training and delivering measurable results through effective coaching and instruction. He is the founder and director of the professional selling program at Bentley University, and he's been there quite some time, where he is helping develop the great new future of sales, which you know I'm all about. He wrote a book that I'm sure that's going to come up in the topics and so much more. Pouli, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Jason, it's great to be here. I feel like we've been recording the show for hours now because every time we talk, it's a show.
It feels like it. And again, I mention this every once in a while on the show. If anyone's ever hosted a podcast, you know what this is like. If not, a little behind the scenes for people. Usually you show up on the stream here and you're going to hit record, but you got to chat. Sometimes there's housekeeping. Sometimes there's some prep to do. Literally had to stop myself at least three times prior to hitting record because I just wanted to keep chatting about things. And I'm like, if we don't stop and actually hit record, we're going to have to reschedule, which has actually happened to me before. I know there's a ton of stuff that we want to cover, that I want to cover, that I'm curious about. And since this first episode, this is about authenticity, let's start with wherever you want to go in your origination in sales. Yep. And one of the big things too, and for the audience here, as we get in this, you'll understand why, but you're really big on workplace and mental like being. Wherever that intersection is, but tell us about your start in sales, what you thought about sales prior to getting into higher ed.
Yeah. I think I never thought I would be a salesperson, never thought I'd be in selling. I'm a recovering engineer. I have two engineering degrees. So my undergrad degree and my graduate degree are both in electrical engineering. I thought I should be an engineer. And I did that for a few years and I realized I really liked working with people more than like working with things. So I started poking around to see what I should do differently. And I actually worked with a career coach for a bit of time to sort out all my options, right? I thought I might be a cartoonist at one point. I thought I might start my own business. There was a lot of things I thought I might do, but ultimately it came down to two things. One was teach, become an educator, or go into sales. And so at the time, it was a smoother transition for me to go from a technical engineering project management role into technical sales than it was to try to figure out how to become a teacher. So I went into sales that way, and it was great from the point of view of working with people. I think when I entered sales as a profession, I don't think it was as sophisticated or as evolved as it is now, right? I think there were still a lot of elements of that traditional old style selling. I was selling technical components to the medical instrumentation world, right? So I was B2B selling, but most of the training and things that surrounded me was B2C, and a lot of it wasn't very good in terms of the training and the onboarding. But we figured it out, and I did that for a while and moved into a couple of different sales roles, did a stint in sales leadership as well, and then slowly started drifting more towards marketing, product management, and sales enablement, which was where sort of my opportunity to teach came into play. I started doing a little bit more working with business partners and salespeople in enablement. And then finally, I started teaching at Bentley University on a part-time basis as an adjunct in 2002, which was a long time ago. And I did that for 10 years until they were looking for a full-time marketing professor. So I joined Bentley in 2012 as a full-time faculty member. And about a year into it, the school came to me and said, hey, you've actually worked in sales. And we have employers that are constantly looking for more curriculum around selling when they hire our students. What do you think we could do here at Bentley? And that was the beginning of the professional sales program. And we pulled that together. It took about a year and a half to get it all put together. And since then, it's been one of the more popular majors. It's been growing quickly, and employers love it. Students love it. Parents love it. And it's amazing to see how it's opened the eyes of a lot of folks that sales is a profession, that having a little bit of insight into what it is before you graduate is a good thing. And I hear from former students all the time who tell me it was a game changer. It was a life-changing decision because they didn't think that's something you could do after you graduated college, or at least not what they had heard you do when you graduate from college. So that was the beginning of all of this. And honestly, it was because I had worked in sales and I was the only faculty member in both the management and marketing department who had actually worked in sales at any point, that I had that opportunity. And since then, my whole life changed, being part of that educational landscape. And everything I do now is due to the creation of that program and the opportunity I had as an educator. So I've never worked harder in my life, but I've never been happier either. It's all good.
I love it. And what's interesting, like on both ends of the story, which is the students that you have and graduating, and they're so grateful and thankful because they see that it's a career, versus where sales was up until even just recently with these kind of programs, and recently being, let's say, the last 20, 25 years, is that thing you fall into or you have to do on the way to something else for people, or you do because you don't fit in anywhere else and you just want to be in sales or like being sales, right? The people who end up in sales on the way to something else is you get your marketing degree, but you got to start in sales, and then you get into marketing, and then you get into somewhere else.
Right.
And then we take that and not even contrast it, but also look at your start in it, which I love what you said, is the recovering engineer. Like for you, when you first got into sales, however long ago that was, as a recovering engineer, what did you think sales was about, required? Yeah. I get that you liked people and you found that you liked people over things, but what was your thoughts on sales back
then? I talk about this with my clients all the time, my consulting clients. And when I first got into sales as a former engineer, let's say, I found that the first 6 months or so, I was terrible. I was terrible. And the reason I was terrible was because I had this ego that told me I was selling technical products to technical people. Therefore, I should act in a way that shows how smart I was as an engineer, right? So for me, selling became pitching, constantly talking about my product and just trying to come up with the menu of items that hopefully one or two of them would catch their interest and turn into a sale. And my mentor at the time took me aside after a while and said, you're really not that good at this. And part of the reason is because you're trying too hard to prove how smart you are to the buyer, to the technical buyer. You're not asking enough questions. You're not genuinely curious about why they're building a new device, what they're going to be doing, what does this mean to them and their team. You need to ask a lot more questions. And in some cases, you actually have to not act dumb, but you have to hold back on all this technical knowledge because they don't want to hear you speak about this technology to the point where they don't have a chance to tell you why they're doing what they're doing. The talk ratio. I know you talk about that in your book, right? The ratio of talking to listening, right? And I really took it to heart and I started holding back and acting more like an investigator or a detective who maybe had some answers, but was still looking to confirm certain things. And I started thinking about the other person on the other side of the table a lot more. And the way I sold completely changed. And I became very genuinely interested in the other people. That was the people element that I was missing. But I stopped trying to push product on people and just ask a lot more questions and be a lot more curious about the industry that I was in. I didn't know much about the Heart Association or the cardiac industry, but I started reading the technical journals. I didn't understand half of them, but I could come up with a question about the FDA and manufacturing, you know, policies and ask a product designer how that impacted them. So I really started to turn the corner in terms of it's all about them. It has nothing to do with my product. really, just how much can I learn about them before we begin to talk about whether or not I can help them solve a problem? And so in the beginning, I think I was just like everyone else, just pitching product and being disappointed. And finally, light dawned and I was like, all right, I'll ask a few more questions. And everything changed at that point.
So you were in sales, you were not in sales, and then you were in sales, and right. then you're coaching and training, and yep. then now teaching it, and now right. speaking, and an author, and all of this stuff. Any guess or ideas or anything to where you got what you thought sales was when you were trying to just sell and tell people and be smart? Any idea where that came from as a mode for sales?
So I think part of it was struggling in the beginning to do it, right? And not doing it well. And then having a few, genuine conversations with people where part of my brain was saying, get to the close, right? Close this job, close this deal, right? You're going to get a close. You got a quota. You've got to make this thing happen. And consciously ignoring that because I was having such a good conversation with the buyer. And then the result was a great closing later, right? It happened, but it became more of a, not a guarantee, but more likely it was going to close because I was thinking that way. Another learning point for me was when I started my own business as an executive coach, working with technology leaders and business owners, what really brought this into focus was when I was meeting with a prospect for the first time to become a client of my own, right? To be my client as an executive coach. My sales process was basically to have a conversation with them about what their life was like as a technology leader, as a business owner, where things were not going well, what were the results of those things not going well, where was the pain that they were experiencing? And a lot of this was very personal, right? It was all about not spending enough time with family, not having enough vacation time, or the stress of working with a co-founder that you don't get along with, all these things that were more about emotions. And I knew I could help them through my coaching process, but before we could get there, we had to figure out what was the pain. And that was really an epiphany for me because what I was doing was coaching them in that initial conversation. And then I realized coaching a person and selling to a person are identical. You build some rapport, you ask great open-ended questions, you get them thinking about things they haven't thought about. And the whole time you're guiding them along this conversation, but you're not forcing them into a decision. You're getting them to tell you what they think they need to succeed and to go forward, and in such a way that it aligns with what you do. So for me, executive coaching was maybe the best learning experience in terms of becoming a better seller, because I was selling something intangible, coaching services. I wasn't selling a product. And I was doing it by coaching people and then realizing a great coaching conversation is actually a great sales conversation. And then that kind of cascades into life, right? Any conversation we have with someone else is a sales conversation. You're not ultimately selling a product or service, but you're building rapport, you're genuinely asking questions, you're trying to figure out where they are, where they've come from, what do they want out of life. That's a conversation between two friends, but that's sales. All the training I had gone to as a young salesperson was very B2C focused and a lot of technique. Always meet with the husband and wife at the same time, so they don't have the excuse, or handle objections in the following ways. It was very one way. My kids joke with me all the time that I have a guy or a gal for everything, right? They have a problem and I'll say, I know someone that can help you with that. And it's because part of my internal mechanism is I feel like I collect people. Like I have collected you, Jason, like you're a friend of mine now. And when I come across new people, I'm just genuinely curious in who they are, where they come from, what are their goals and aspirations, or what are they doing on a weekend afternoon? I'm just curious. And because of that, I form these quick relationships that are memorable. And I always have this big network of people. And I think if salespeople thought of themselves more as collectors of people than of closers of deals, I think they'd be better at what they do, because it's all about human connection. It always will be. It always will be.
So now let's shift to like the students you have and what you've been working on for, let's say, 10 years now, 9 years with the program and, and doing that. How do you address that? How do you support the future generation of salespeople to be naturally curious, which not everyone is, and then to be authentic and and do the things and look at sales the way that you're talking about?
So we talk about this a lot in class. And one of the things that we talk a lot about is how sales has changed over the last 20 plus years, right? And everyone talks about how it's changed, right? How it's become very role specific, right? You have lead generation folks, you have people that product demos, you have closers, you have customer success. It's all very role based. And there's a lot of technology information that feeds into it, right? So from the very cold description I just gave people, when I talk about it with my students, they feel like sales has become this automatic thing that's driven by efficiency and sales velocity. And so we talk about that, and then I bring it around and I say, which means that ultimately you have to be more human than ever to do it well, because you have less time to talk to a prospect. You have less opportunity to connect with a prospect because they're blocking you with all the great technology that you're using to access them. So when you do have that one moment to speak to a prospect on the phone, the last thing they want to hear from you is, hey, how's your day going today? If I'm in lead generation, the last thing I'm going to ask someone who picks up the phone is, hey, it's Jim Pouliopoulos. I'm calling from XYZ. How's your day going today? Why? Because that person on the other side of the phone knows I don't care, because I don't even know them, right? So for me, it's all about having my students understand genuine human connection drives everything in life, including sales. And so what we spend a lot of time on in class in terms of role-playing and some of the exercises, we do a lot of listening exercises that have nothing to do with selling a product or service. We do a lot of mirroring exercises so that they can get to know how to mirror someone in a conversation. And all of these things become very handy to them when they go off and do job interviews, even if they're not going into sales. But I think they start to realize how human the role is. And a lot of them come to me midpoint in the semester, if they're in my class, and they'll say, I want to talk to you about a career in sales because I never thought about it before. And those are the best ones, right? Because people who always think about a career in sales, I think sometimes just think about the wealth or the power or the fame that comes with being a great salesperson, but they don't often think about the ultimate reason why you go into sales, which is help people. And so those students that come meet with me often feel like they've missed something by not thinking about selling as helping. And so we have these great conversations about it. And I'm always excited when I see them pursue sales careers, because they're going to be great, because they're not doing it for the money. The money will come, but they're not doing it for the money. They're doing it because they genuinely like people and interacting with people. When a finance student comes to me and says, I'm in finance because I was great at math in high school. And all my parents and all our friends told me I should be in finance. I can make a lot of money. It's really important, blah, blah, blah. But I'm bored with it, right? Bored with it. Sales just seems like so different than what I thought I would do. Sometimes they don't want to major in professional sales, but a lot of times they go and they work in sales when they graduate because they realize it's a much better fit for their personality. And that goes back to figuring out, what do you do well and what do you enjoy doing well? Because if you enjoy math, like I did all through high school, math and science, I love math and science. But did I enjoy being good at it when I was working? No, it felt like drudgery. I also enjoyed writing and communication and doing presentations, and no one ever thought that was a career path for me. And I enjoyed doing that well, which means I work at my craft a lot. And so these students that come to me, I always ask them those two questions. What do you do well? And we make a list. And out of all these things, what do you enjoy doing well of all these things? 9 times out of 10, the things they enjoy doing well have nothing to do with what they're doing in the classroom. Their leadership opportunities on campus, clubs, organizations, things that they're passionate about outside of class. And sometimes they realize what I enjoy doing well is working with people. And that leads them to sales, and for the right reasons. I think for the right reasons. So I try to give them as much of the benefit of spending a long time trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grow up. And I hopefully get them to that point a little faster than it took me at times.
And especially as someone like myself who has a bachelor's degree in one thing and then a career path in completely different things.
Yes.
How do the students take that? Obviously, I'm guessing they appreciate it. If they're drawn to the class, they want to be a part of that. But when you're teaching them that sales is about authentic, right, genuine connection, yeah, relationships, collecting people, right, curiosity, how does that conflict with what they thought sales was, similar to what you thought sales was? And how do you go about that? And where are they embracing that? Where is that easy for them?
A lot of them then go seek internships in sales, right? Which is one of the best ways just to try it out. So if they're majoring at professional sales at Bentley, we put in the major, the requirement that they do an internship in sales. And it's the only major at the university where you're required to do an internship. Because my feeling was, a lot of people say they want to go in sales, but then they go into sales and they realize they don't want to be in sales, right? Mike Tyson saying, everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face, right? And then you don't really have a plan. So you go into sales, I want them to do one internship just so they can realize sales is for me. I'd like to stay in sales. This is what I want to do before it's too late, right, to change majors. And I also want them to realize there's a lot of different kinds of sales. So if they go into an internship and they're cold calling and they're doing lead generation, they come to me after the internship and say, I don't want to be in sales. I really hated the internship. I didn't enjoy it. I'll ask them, is it sales or this kind of sales? In other words, would you prefer selling financial packages or life insurance or insurance products and doing one-on-one networking sales, relationship building? And a lot of them light up and they're like, oh yeah, that's what I'd rather do than sitting on the phone all day. So part of it is try one kind of selling so you at least have a radar chart of where you might want to enter the job market full time. So part of it's internships. The other part of it is we do a sales competition at Bentley every year, which was funded by a very generous alumni. And we run this competition every year just to give every student at Bentley, you don't have to be a sales major, you don't have to know anything about sales, you don't have to take any sales courses. It's an open competition where we give them a role play scenario. They've got a few weeks to learn it. We do a little bit of training and then they come in and they do an actual two rounds of a role play. First one's like a lead generation call. The second one is a closing call. And I can't tell you how many students walk out of that competition like so jacked up. Even if they did terribly, they walk out of there so excited. I didn't know sales could be this much fun, right? And I think a lot of them don't realize it's just having a conversation. So we give them an opportunity to try it out in that space. And then I bring a lot of alumni back to the school to talk to them about what it's like to be an early career seller. What are some of the struggles? What are some of the things you have to get through in order for things to really begin to get interesting for you longer term? And students, they soak that stuff up, right? They don't want to hear. They want to hear from me because I have all this experience. But let's face it, I'm a little older than them. I'm older than their parents in most cases, right? So for me, it's fine, but they'd rather hear from someone who graduated 3 years ago and is really killing it because they love what they do. And I try to spend as much time in class that way. And then I know it's a long answer here, but the last thing that I do, which is one of the first things that I do throughout the course, is I talk to them about happiness as a general topic. Early in the semester, I do a presentation for every class about how to be happier and some of the tools and techniques they can use on a daily basis to be happier. I said, because if you're happier and you take care of your mental well-being, then whatever you do, you'll be better at it. If you go into sales, you'll be much better at it because you'll have a different attitude about the whole process. And then I encourage them, when they think about their career, to think about it as a series of experiments. Take a job because you have a hypothesis. You're going to like it because of X, Y, and Z. Every 6 months, step back and say, do I still like it? Is it still serving what I thought it would? Am I learning what I thought I would? If not, go do another experiment. And do it when you're younger, before you're saddled with a mortgage payment and a couple of car payments and kids and dogs and house maintenance, right? All these things that get in the way. I think a lot of times young adults, when they graduate college, feel like they've got to nail it right at the very beginning. And I tell them, that ain't the case. Take 10 years to figure it out. there's plenty of ways to do that. So mental well-being, a lot of experiments with your career, and then eventually you'll learn what you're good at and what you enjoy being good at. And then you begin to double down. And then your passion comes through. And then after your passion comes through, your purpose gets revealed. And that, for me, is the way it works.
What's interesting is for people listening or watching this, might be thinking, like, I asked and we started talking about authenticity, right? Especially in a sales role.
Right.
And then you're talking about happiness and being a well-being, which is
right.
the title of your book.
Yeah.
And for people who are wondering, like, where that connection, like, I'm talking about, like, being transparent and honest and
yeah.
and authentic, it all applies to it. Because one of the big things, and I know you can expand on this too, is that if you're not happy and or you're not in the right role, like you said, like getting yeah. yourself into the right thing for you, then you're not going to be authentic or yourself.
No.
Or if you're not happy and you're desperate or something is going on, especially in sales, you're going to start to sell from a different perspective, which
yes.
is, instead of this being something I'm doing for you and with you, potential customer, it's now something I'm doing to you because I have yes. this other stuff going on. And then it changes the game, right?
It becomes desperation, right? Desperation, yeah. anger, whatever those things are that are going on in the background, absolutely affect how you sell. And for me, the other piece of this is the other side of the sale, which is the outcome. I always tell salespeople, when I coach salespeople, I say, I know how hard this is to hear, but you must disconnect from the outcome of the call. You cannot possibly think about closing the deal when you're in the middle of a great conversation with a prospect. If you have a good sales conversation flow, if you have a good process for walking the prospect through whatever it is that you need to find out from them, if they're a good fit, if you have good, inquisitive, open-ended questions that you can ask and have a great conversation with them, the sale will happen. But if you're thinking about the sale and the close the whole time, you will invariably sound desperate, and desperation triggers the negativity bias in the prospect. They hear the desperation, they hear you pushing, and their fear reaction begins to come up. Their defensiveness begins to rise because they're like, why is this person seem so desperate or unsure of what he's saying? I don't want to do business with them. I don't trust them, right? So I think that piece is sometimes lost upon people. And there's always exceptions to a rule. Are there people out there that are hard charging, type A, traditional hard selling closers? Yeah, there are. There's fewer and fewer of them every day because there's way too much information in the hand of the prospect to be like that. So they succeed in spite of it, I think. But I think that the world-class sellers I see have a calmness where it ain't about the sale. When I was meeting with those prospects for my executive coaching business, in the back of my mind, I know that my brain was screaming, I need another client. I need more clients. But having that mindset of how am I helping this person on the other side of the table really calmed me down, because all I did was have a conversation to help them. I was literally giving them a sample of my service while talking to them. And in the cases where I tried to close prematurely or tried to push because I felt desperate, I never closed a deal like that. Never. There were other deals that I thought I had no chance of closing because I never really got to the point where I was talking about terms and pricing. The next day I'd get a call from them saying, yeah, I'd really like to work with you. That was a great conversation yesterday. How do I sign up? All because I put myself in that different mindset in the middle of the conversation.
And it is so true. If anyone's had any experience with salespeople, it's usually one of those two modes, slash the one person also who has, they might be calm and they literally have no idea what they're doing and they're just hoping right. that you're going to buy. But otherwise it's the hard charging and it's the Zen-like consulting salesperson, which I think is maybe we should collaborate on a book with that title. And again, part of why this is so important for this conversation about authenticity is it's hard to be authentic. It's hard to be confident, which then leads to authenticity and transparency if you have other stuff going on or you don't right. understand your role. And we're not even to the process part, which is the sales part, which is going right. to be in the second part of our conversation. But all of this is so important for authenticity. It's tough. Again, you get into a desperate mode or you're just skipping yep. steps or you just don't understand what you're supposed right. to be doing in the conversation. and then you're going to miss out. So I think this is a good place for us to stop the first part before we get into
Excellent.
Persuasion and the sales process itself.
Sure.
I know for people who want to connect with you, there's two big things. One is they can go to your website, which is pooley.com, and then they can also find you, Jim Pooleyopoulos, on LinkedIn as well. And I appreciate you being here. This has been so fun. Like I thought, like looking at the clock here, we're just flying through stuff and there's so much I want to talk about. I don't know how we're going to get this in two more episodes as well. But no matter what, I appreciate you being here, Pooley, and sharing all this and helping, especially from a mental health standpoint, but doing what you're doing for the future salespeople in authenticity. And for everyone tuning in, thank you for being a part of this. As you can tell, if you've made it this far, there's going to be a lot of stuff in these conversations. So please make sure to come back and tune in for part two on persuasion. All of this is designed to help shift the world from what we were just talking about, what Pooley and I were discussing about what he thought about sales and what he did in the beginning and what we all do in the beginning versus what people are really looking for and what's really authentic, and shifting sales from this dirty word or just this thing that people do versus what it could be. And I appreciate everyone tuning in. I appreciate you for being here. Thank you for filling the world with authentic persuaders.